They say 80% of our processed foods now contain genetically modified organisms, which the government claims are safe. This leads us to ask, why then are so many saying no to GMOs while our government is saying yes?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 745th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Nandi who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hello, folks. You know, when we developed the ability to modify the genes of biological organisms, we made it a lot easier to grow our food crops. For example, we now grow crops that can withstand glyphosate herbicides, and thus one person may now kill a million weeds from the comfort of an air-conditioned tractor. We can also infuse the pesticide Bacillus thuringiensis in living plants, and thus when a pest bites into that plant, the plant will kill the pest. Since modifying the genes of crops has made it so easy to grow those crops, they have become nearly ubiquitous throughout our food chain. And the modified genes of those crops have become nearly ubiquitous throughout the human body. Consider this. Researchers from the Department of Gynecology at the University of Sherbrooke Hospital in Quebec found the Bacillus thuringiensis pesticide in the bloodstreams of 93% of the pregnant women they tested. And ladies and gentlemen, 93% is nearly ubiquitous. Are genetically modified organisms safe to eat? Our government, under its doctrine of substantial equivalence, claims that species modified with genes from another species are safe to eat because they are substantially equivalent to the original species. And as such, the government regulates them as if they were just merely conventional crops. In other words, if an ear of genetically modified corn looks like a regular old ear of corn, then it will be deemed safe to eat. And that's that. However, a number of people, some of whom may include the pregnant women whose blood contains the Bacillus thuringiensis toxin, appear to be skeptical of the government's doctrine of substantial equivalence and are raising quite a ruckus over the ubiquitousness of genetically modified organisms. And so today we ask, why are so many saying no to GMOs when the government is saying yes? Here to help us find an answer, we have Rebecca Spector, who is the West Coast Director of Center for Food Safety. Rebecca, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Pleasure to have you aboard, sitting in for Andrew Kimbrell, who will join us sometime down the line. He's out raising hell in New York City, right?
Right. He's at the Your Right to Know rally in Brooklyn right now.
And do you think we have a right to know?
I do, and I think I'm not the only one. Poll after poll show that more than 90% of people want GMO foods to be labeled. And this has been, decades of polls showing this consistently. So, I and along with a lot of other people feel like it's really time for the government to label these foods and to give people the right to know about the foods they're eating.
Good. And you're with Center for Food Safety. What is that?
We're a national nonprofit organization, and we focus on the environmental and health risks of foods produced using new technologies. And one of our main goals is to make sure that our government is adequately regulating these new food technologies. So, as you said, Michael, a lot of the food agencies like FDA established this policy that GE foods would be substantially equivalent. But what's interesting about that, as you said, is that was based on the fact that it had to be materially different. So in order for a food to be labeled, it has to be materially different.
In other words, an ear of corn would have to have some broccoli growing out of it or something to make it substantially different.
Right, or that you could taste different, or if it smells different, or if your other senses can determine that it's different. But because GE foods can't be sensed in that way, that's really why FDA declared them to be substantially equivalent. So it wasn't really based on any science or any testing. There hadn't been any safety tests. This was in the early 90s.
But before we go into that, let me ask you a very simple question, and I'm looking for a very simple answer. The government, vis-a-vis this substantial equivalence, says that GMO foods are safe. Do you believe GMO foods are safe?
I believe that we don't have enough information to answer that. I think we definitely have enough information to show that it's not safe environmentally.
Okay. Let's pick up that in a little while. I just wanted to get your information. I want to also introduce today with it, we have Megan Westgate, who's the executive director of the Non-GMO Project. Megan, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. So, welcome to the Food Chain. What on earth is the Non-GMO Project?
The Non-GMO Project is a nonprofit organization that's committed to protecting a non-GMO food supply, labeling products that are non-GMO so that we can give consumers an informed choice.
So I guess you believe in the right to know.
We definitely believe in the right to know, and basically the project was formed after about 10 years of efforts to get mandatory labeling had not been successful, and we decided to stop waiting for the government and take matters into our own hands. And if the government won't label things that do have GMOs in them, then we're labeling things that don't have GMOs so that people can make an informed choice.
Well, that's going to be an interesting one. Well, let me ask you the same question. You know, do you believe in this substantial equivalent argument that GMOs are safe?
No, not at all. I mean, like Rebecca said, it's not based on any testing or research. The fact is, even if you can't taste or smell the difference with a GMO crop, there are laboratory tests that can identify whether or not something is genetically modified. It certainly is very different than anything created through nature or through traditional crossbreeding.
Ah, okay, good. And then let's go back to Rebecca. Do I still have you on the air here? I don't, so I have to click on this thing here. All right. Rebecca, are you here?
Yes, I'm
okay,
here.
Good. Let me ask both of you then, the big question, which really is, who pays your way? I always like to ask that so the people who are listening can get an idea of who supports your organization. So, Center for Food Safety, Rebecca Spector, who pays your way in the world?
We're supported by individuals. We have 200,000 members across the country, and we're also supported by family foundations that support the work that we're doing, mostly foundations that are concerned about environmental effects and human health effects from our food.
Okay, good. And Megan, who supports the Non-GMO Project? Who pays the way?
We are supported by individuals and also food companies. The goal of our organization is to be entirely funded by revenue from our product verification program. So like I said, we label products that are not GMO. We're the only organization in North America that has a standard and a verification program for non-GMO foods. And so while we do appreciate donations, our goal as an organization is to be funded by the programs mm-hmm. that we offer so that we can focus on our outreach and education.
A quick question. Isn't that already a function then of those people who certify organic foods? Because you can't be organic and be genetically modified at the same time, can you?
Well, that is a great question. GMOs are certainly an excluded method under the National Organic Program, and GMO avoidance is, of course, a central tenet of organic. The challenge is that the organic program does not require any testing for GMOs, and the rules in the organic program around GMOs were put in time long before GMOs were so ubiquitous. And so over the last 10 to 15 years, as the acreage of especially corn, soy, and canola has increased in terms of what's being grown in GMO form, there's an increased risk of contamination to crops. And if you're not testing somewhere in the food chain, then there's no way to know if that contamination is happening. So the project was actually originally founded mostly by organic food companies who saw that there was a growing risk of contamination and wanted to make sure there was a standard and a program in place that would help keep organic non-GMO.
Yeah, I remember doing a show with Nell Newman of Newman's Own Organic and having her tell the story about the difficulty she was having tracking down organic cornmeal and corn that was not genetically engineered. I mean, it was a tremendous problem for her. So I guess that what your organization is trying to do is address that concern and actually let us know if something is labeled organic that it really is not contain the genetically modified organisms. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Today we're going in search of organic foods that are not, or foods that are not, that do not contain genetically modified organisms. And the big question to me today, really, is why are so many now saying no to GMOs while their government is saying yes? Are we losing trust? Is that what's going on? Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. Mike Lolson here. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking about genetically modified organisms and why so many of us are talking about, are saying no to the government's assertion that genetically modified foods are good simply because they are substantially equivalent to non-GMO foods. In other words, a genetically engineered piece of corn will look just like a... Did I get you there? Okay, I think I got everybody here. A genetically engineered piece of corn will look just exactly the same as a regular piece of corn. So therefore, since it looks the same, it has to be the same. And since these genetically engineered crops have made growing them so easy, they have become ubiquitous throughout our food chain. 80% of our processed foods now contain genetically engineered foods. So what's wrong with this? Nothing, says the government. But what do you think? A lot of us are starting to think that there might not be so much truth in what the government says, and that's really what I want to get to today. Why are so many saying no when the government is saying yes? Rebecca Spector, Center for Food Safety, why? What are we so afraid? What is it about what the government says that you're not believing?
Well, I think it's more of what they're not saying. I mean, the government really isn't saying very much, except to say that they have determined that these foods are substantially equivalent to other foods. They haven't shown in any way the burden is on them to show safety, and there haven't been long-term safety testing for health or certainly not for environmental concerns. And so I think rightfully so, consumers are wary. My food is being produced with this new technology, with DNA from different species. You know, people hear these words and, you know, rightfully so, get concerned. Why does my food need to be produced in this way? Why can't it be the
same? Well, it's a lot cheaper to produce it that way. I mean, one farmer can sit in the comfort of an air-conditioned tractor and kill a million weeds. Wow, that's easy. You know, I mean, I used to hoe weeds. I know what it's like. So having that incredible ability And yet on the flip side of that coin, you know, the ability for a plant to withstand glyphosate herbicide is also imbued inside the plant that we must eat. And that's what I'm curious about. Now, let's look at this whole notion of substantial equivalence. Do you know who originated that, who developed that doctrine?
Yeah, it was developed in the early 90s, and one of the main people behind that was Michael Taylor, and he was at the FDA at the time. However, previous to joining FDA, he did have ties legally as legal counsel for Monsanto, and after his position at FDA, he did go on to work for Monsanto again. And he's not the only one. There are several people in the EPA and the FDA during the late 80s and early 90s that worked for the biotech industry previously to joining the administration that were behind these policies. And I do think that that's another reason why a lot of people are a little bit wary, is because of this what we call revolving door between industry and our government. And that continues today. But people, rightfully so, I think, have issues when we hear that. And one thing I just would like to correct is that, you know, there's no correlation between GMO crops and a reduction in food prices. So it's not clear at all that this has not made our food cheaper in any way. So I think that's important to remember.
Okay. I'll save that argument for you. Megan Westgate, a non-GMO project. What's wrong with Monsanto deciding whether our foods are safe or not? I mean, clearly Michael Taylor was the man who got Monsanto's bovine growth hormone through the FDA with no safety efficacy studies, and through his doctrine of substantial equivalence, has managed to get the whole genetically engineered food cropping system through the FDA with no safety efficacy studies. Do you see anything wrong with the people who make something determining its efficacy and safety?
Well, of course, there's an obvious conflict of interest, and I just want to additionally clarify that GMOs are not necessarily easier to grow, and in fact, what's happening is that about 80% of all the GMOs grown worldwide are engineered to be tolerant to Roundup, as you've mentioned. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, in theory, it could be very easy for a farmer, but what's actually happening is that the use of glyphosate has increased 15 since GMOs were introduced. So there's tons more chemicals being put on our food, into the soil, into the water. That's one problem. But beyond that, there's now a superweed epidemic where wild species, as they've been getting so heavily sprayed year after year, have mutated to also develop a tolerance. And so basically, herbicides like Roundup are not working nearly as well anymore. And so, yes, in theory, the farmer's there in their comfortable air-conditioned tractor, and they could take out a whole field's worth of weeds easily. That's not what's happening. They're spraying, and the weeds aren't dying. And now the biotech companies are telling them that they need to then go and spot apply 2,4-D and even more noxious chemicals, right, and go back to more labor-intensive methods. So the technology is actually really failing right now.
And which is something I'd like to pick up down the line in just a moment. But I'd like to return to this notion of substantial equivalence and how a manufacturer of something, of a whole technology, could be so adept that they would insert themselves into the government and develop the protocols for determining the efficacy of a product's safety. How do we come to trust and believe a government if that's the case?
Well, I think that's why so many people are developing distrust for GMOs. And if you look at the situation globally, in the U.S., we grow about as many GMOs as the whole rest of the world combined. So we're in a really unique context where they're being pushed really hard. There's tons of PR from the biotech industry. They obviously, as you're saying, have a lot of influence over the federal government and the policies that are made around them. In Europe, for example, in contrast, any food product in the EU that has more than 0.9% GMO has to be labeled. And that's typically the situation with most developed countries around the world, is that either GMOs are banned or they have mandatory labeling or they're heavily restricted in other ways. So we're in a really unique situation in this country where the government is approving them based on studies from industry. There's no mandatory labeling. There's been no long-term safety studies. There are clear problems with the environmental impacts developing. And the bottom line is that this whole thing is an excellent business model for the biotech companies. They are selling the herbicides and they're selling the expensive seeds to use with the herbicides. So they're totally winning out in this. Farmers, on the other hand, are paying more money for seeds, spending more money on herbicides. There's no benefit for consumers and indeed health concerns. So really the only one winning out in this equation is the biotech industry. But
well, wait a minute. Isn't the government winning out somehow here too? I mean, they must be. The government must be winning out to so readily accede to industry's plan for acceptance.
Well, the government representatives who are being lobbied by the biotech industry are winning out, and I think that's about the extent of it.
Huh. Okay, so you don't trust the government, do you?
On this issue, I don't trust that the government is taking as active of a role as it could and should and as what we deserve.
Rebecca, do you trust the government?
Well, I think that, you know, the government has a long history of approving products that are unsafe. You know, take DDT, you know, or drugs like DES. I mean, the public remembers these things, remembers that our government approves drugs, approves pesticides that later go on to show severe harm. And that's why a lot of people, when they hear something like this, they want to know, why do I need to be eating this food that is produced in this way? There doesn't seem to be a need.
You don't trust the government, do you, Rebecca?
I'm speaking for what I think I'm speaking as a consumer and as somebody that, you know, feeds food to myself and to my family. And I think that...
You don't trust the government, do you?
Well, I think that the...
yeah, hold on. We're going to hear what Andrew Kimbrell has to say about trusting the government when we get back from this break. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, the subject is the government's regulation of genetically modified organisms and the food we eat. Right back. Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about saying no to GMO. Why people are saying no when the government is telling us to say yes. Got an email, an interesting tweet from Mothers Against GMOs, and they pointed to a study out of Canada. 93% of unborn babies are contaminated with GMO toxins, the study finds. This from a university hospital in Quebec. And yet the government says that's okay because the genetically modified foods that we consume are substantially equivalent to regular foods, and thus we may consider them safe. But many people are saying, well, wait a minute. One of those people who are saying, wait a minute, is Andrew Kimbrell, who is the Executive Director of Center for Food Safety, and he's on the streets of New York City right now. Andrew, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, barely. Tell us what you're doing.
I am at Grand Army Plaza down in Brooklyn, and there's hundreds of people here who are starting a march to Washington to protest the government policies you've been talking about and to protest the sort of Monsanto control over several of our agencies and to demand labeling for GMOs. So it's kind of exciting. I just spoke in front of the crowd, and it's a great old-fashioned demonstration. So I can do some reporting for you here, Michael, on-the-ground reporting right here in Brooklyn.
We love it. A little bit of live radio action from New York City. Now, wait a minute. Last time we talked about your book, Fatal Harvest, that was Food Chain Radio's show. Set number is 477. That was 268 editions ago. And during that time, genetically modified crops have kind of become ubiquitous throughout the land, and government says it's okay, because they're substantially equivalent to regular crops. But you don't believe the government, do you, Andrew?
Not only do I'm totally willing to answer your last question, Michael, if you can hear me. Of course we don't trust government. I have offices in Washington, D.C., And, you know, anybody who's in Washington, D.C., if you look what happened to the health care bill, if you look what happened to the global warming bill, if you look what happened to the Wall Street regulation bill, well, you realize we live much more in a corporate oligarchy than we do in a democracy. That's just fact. That's the groundwork we have to work in, and we have to find ways. And what we do at the Center for Food Safety is we sue the government. So, you know, we've sued them on a number of times, and because of our litigation and because of the great work that people like Megan and others are doing, in the last few years, we have halted the commercialization of all genetically engineered wheat. We've halted the commercialization of genetically engineered rice, of genetically engineered bentgrass, of these genetically engineered biopharmaceuticals, that we put vaccines and grow them in our food. And at least for the last 5.5 years, we stopped genetically engineered alfalfa, which is such a danger to our organic dairy industry. Now we're back in court on that. So, you know, they have not become ubiquitous. I think that's the impression, Michael. Actually, they're still limited to the same four crops that were there in 1997, which is corn, sorghum, canola, with a little sugar beets.
How on earth did 93% of pregnant women end up with Bacillus thuringiensis in their bloodstream if it's not ubiquitous? 93% is pretty darn close to ubiquitous.
Yeah, well, it is ubiquitous in corn, which is where almost all the BT is. About 90% of our corn is genetically engineered. It's being grown in this country and much in Canada. The same is certainly true of soy, but a little around 90% of that as well. So in the crops that they have managed to, sort of take over, yeah, it is ubiquitous. That study, by the way, just to be sort of science nerdy about it, they have found BT. We think that BT almost certainly came from genetically engineered crops. That has not been established. There may be other sources that might have created that contamination.
Like what?
The use of it in agricultural uses. But my own view is that it was created through the eating of meat and BT products. So I think it's a good study. It needs to be replicated. And it shows one thing for darn sure, which is our government has told us that BT, which is an endotoxin, that BT could not survive the digestive tract. We now know that's wrong. It's not only surviving that digestion tract of these women, but it's also getting through the placenta and into the fetuses. So we know that assurance of our government is wrong. That it does show.
Okay. So
one more thing, Michael, just on this. You know, it is so hypocritical because that Monsanto and the other companies, the other chemical companies that run this technology, they have gone to our patent office and they have patented the novel bacteria genes, the novel virus genes, the novel promoter genes. They patented the plants themselves as being completely novel, not substantially equivalent. If they were substantially equivalent, you could not get a patent. Patenting has to show novelty. It has to show it's completely new. So they go to the patent office, and they say it's completely new. No one's ever seen this stuff, which is correct, in foods before. Completely new bacteria genes, new virus genes. They have the patents, as I said, not just on the plants, on every one of those genes and promoters. And then they go to the FDA and say, hey, there's nothing new here, folks.
So
it's a complete anomaly.
In effect, because they have a friendly government, they are able to have their cake and eat it too, as it were. They can.
That's
they can,
right. And you know, Michael Taylor, you brought up Michael Taylor before. He was the King and Spalding was Monsanto's law firm in Washington, and he was the lead attorney working for Monsanto. And in 1992, the Bush administration brought him into the FDA as deputy commissioner for food policy. He had already written the industry policy, which was no mandatory labeling, no mandatory testing of all genetically engineered foods. Then the revolving door revolved into the FDA, got that policy established, which we still work under now, that there will be no mandatory testing, no mandatory labeling, substantial equivalence. Then we called for an investigation of him, and he was revolved out to the USDA, and then he, after that, revolved out to run Monsanto's office in Washington, D.C. And now Michael Taylor is back inside the FDA as deputy commissioner for food policy.
He's kind of
so
like
this revolving door.
He's kind of, as I understand it, he's the food safety czar for the United States of America.
Well, yeah, that's the informal title.
The informal
that's
title.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, and to do him, some people said that he's actually sort of, you know, become more sympathetic to labeling some of our causes. That is yet to be seen.
So, let's see. Megan brought up an interesting point. There's this whole issue of the revolving door in and out of government determining what is safe and what is not safe. But the other thing that's happening that is capturing my attention is the fact that the genetically engineered crops that we have out there are a lot of them are no longer doing what they were designed to do, and now, and so the question I have is, if they're not doing what they're designed to do, which is to, instead of killing bugs, they're creating superbugs. Instead of allowing for the herbicide glyphosate to kill weeds, they're developing superweeds. So if genetically modified crops are not doing what they're supposed to do, what the heck will they be doing? Does anybody know? Andrew?
Well, it's fairly cynical, and Megan actually said it very, very well. The companies did not realize that Charles Darwin was going to show up. You see, they thought they could endlessly spray these herbicides, and the weeds would not get resistant to them. And they thought they could put in BT genetic material 24/7, right, in those crops, in every cell of the corn, and that these insects would not get resistant to BT. Very naive, totally unscientific. And, of course, now we have seen 10 years later, 12 years later, that we have massive resistance to 10 to 20 million acres of superweeds already with Roundup. And we just saw the big report coming out about rootworm now. You can't kill it with BT. It's resistant. So this is just adaptation. This is simple science 01, biology 01.
Okay, then the question is, how do we adapt from here on out? This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson, with Andrew, Kimbrell, Megan, Westgate, and Rebecca Spector. Right back. Well, folks, I don't know about you, but I want to believe the government. You know, if I could believe the government, my life would be a lot easier. But I'm having trouble believing the government these days, and I'm having trouble because I just don't trust how it works anymore when a corporation that manufactures a whole technology, and then they insert themselves into the federal government, and then they determine how this product, this technology is going to be used, and the efficacy of it, and they say these are the procedures by which we're going to operate, and then they disappear. And do you trust the government? What do you think? That's the question of today. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, we have Andrew Kimbrell on the line. He's raising hell in New York City. And are you really marching to Washington, D.C.?
Well, unfortunately, we have several litigations involved, so I will not be marching, but there will be hundreds here who are marching.
From New York City to Washington, D.C.?
That's a 16-day march, absolutely. And they're going to be picking up folks along the way, and so people can certainly get on the website, and I think it's called Right to March, and maybe Megan knows the website exactly, and join
in. Right to Know March, with the two is the numeral two, righttoknowmarch.org.
Yeah, right. They're going through Philly and Baltimore, and yeah.
Wow. That would be fun just for the heck of it. I wouldn't mind that walk just because I like going on walks. That'd be fun.
It's a great crowd.
So, we're stuck with a situation where some of us are having trouble believing the government. Where do we go from here, Andrew Kimbrell? If we're having trouble believing the government, what do we believe in?
Well, yeah. First of all, let me quickly make an exception to that, which is under the Obama administration, the National Organic Program is being run really well by a woman named Kathleen Merrigan. She's second in command at the USDA, and she is a fighter for organic, and so people shouldn't be afraid that they're going to be destroying the integrity of organic. That's one place where we have, you know, where things are going well. But what we've seen over and over again is there's two great avenues.
Well, wait a minute. Here we have Kathleen Merrigan at one end of the government and Michael Taylor at the other end.
Schizophrenia, I call it. Government schizophrenia. You know, also Vilsack, who is, you know, governor of Iowa and Biotechnology Industrial Organization, governor of the year. So, I don't know, Obama had this sort of idea of putting total opposites in these agencies and seeing what happened. I don't particularly think it was a good idea, but Merrigan has been doing a good job. Vilsack, on the other hand, and the administration have been giving carte blanche to the biotech industry. No worse than the Bush administration, I can assure you.
Megan, you're as the executive director of the non-GMO project, you're looking at a situation where we're having to certify organic foods as being non-GMO. Evidently, you're not feeling too secure with this, with the government either, huh?
Well, to clarify, we verify both organic and non-organic. A little over half of the products in the program are organic. Like I said, the company.
Oh, okay. So you don't have to be organic to be non-GMO.
No, you don't. And okay. And part of our goal is to preserve a non-GMO food supply, which starts at the bottom of the food chain. And one of the problems is that the biotech companies also are the seed companies. Monsanto is the world's biggest seed company. And, you know, sometimes when you look at the failure of the GMO technology, it leads one to ask, you know, why would farmers plant this anyway? And part of the answer, if not most of the answer, is that the seed supply is being controlled by the biotech companies, and they're really restricting what kinds of things are available.
So if you want to grow corn, you have to grow our corn.
Right. And so this is part of why the non-GMO project focuses broadly, is that our goal is to get as many companies and as many products as we possibly can totally committed to non-GMO, doing that testing so that we can preserve a non-GMO seed supply fundamentally, because that's at stake and that does threaten to undermine the ability of anyone to produce organic in the future. So, and there is a strong recognition from the organic industry right now that we need to reach out, and the issue of biotech contamination is bigger than just the organic industry. A lot of companies who export, for example, are very concerned about contamination right now. So it's a really broad spread movement.
Well, and that we're having this trouble, you're having trouble with the government too, aren't you? When it gets right down to it.
Are you asking if I trust the government?
That's right.
I do not trust the government on this one, I've got to say. I agree with everything Andy said. And, you know, as Rebecca pointed out early on in the conversation, they've approved these plants without any safety testing, any long-term studies on the human health. How can we trust that? There's really nothing there to trust.
Well,
they haven't done their homework.
You know, that's a great question. Andrew, let's go back to you. You've been at this a long time. We worked together 268 Saturdays ago. Has the government conducted any efficacy studies with respect to the safety of genetically modified organisms? Are they safe to, do we know they're safe to eat?
No, we don't. They have never done that from 1992 on with Michael Taylor that we talked about. We have never had mandatory safety testing or labeling of these foods. It is obviously not in the interest of the industry to do any safety testing, and the government has not done any safety testing. So that's the sad situation we find ourselves in, is that we're really shopping in the dark. And 60% of processed food has genetically engineered ingredients in it, and we simply are doing a long-term experiment on the American public, and we're not letting them know. We're not letting them make a choice on whether they want to be part of that experiment or not.
Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to ask, we'll have a few minutes left, and we'll ask Andrew and Rebecca and Megan where we go from here and what we can do as consumers and as food rights advocates, people who are concerned about the food we eat. 93% of unborn babies now have genetically modified Bacillus thuringiensis toxins in their bloodstream. Incredible. Where are we going to go? Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, I don't know about you, but I'm having trouble coming to grips with the fact that I don't trust the government. I want to. I really do want to. But there's a couple of facts that are just really causing trouble here for me, perhaps for you. Fact number one is that the corporation that manufactures genetically manufactured or genetically modified organisms essentially owns them and controls them all the way through the food chain. And there is, they also control the government that regulates them. So the government, when the government tells us it's okay, is it the government that's telling us it's okay, or is it the company that makes money from them that's telling us it's okay? I can't distinguish between the two. The other thing that really is causing havoc for me is that the government does not seem to want me to know, be able to know whether the food I'm eating is genetically modified or not. And that is causing problems for me as well. Andrew Kimbrell, do you think we should have the right to know?
Oh, absolutely. You know, as Megan was mentioning before, 50 countries around the world, including almost all of our trading partners, Europe, Asia, South America, even some in Africa, have labeling. They have mandatory labeling. So our companies, many of these multinational companies, for example, are labeling for everyone else in the world, but just not for us. And you know, it's to me incredibly frustrating that, you know, everyone else in the world gets to choose, but they said to the American public, no, you don't get to choose.
Megan Westgate, the non-GMO project, why doesn't the government want us to know?
Well, I think the biotech industry doesn't want us to know because they know that poll after poll shows that people don't like the idea of GMOs, they don't want to eat them, they wouldn't eat them if given a choice, and so they understand that their entire business model rests on keeping the public in the dark about this, and that's just not right, and it's a fundamental reason why the Non-GMO Project was created. We believe that everyone has the right to know what's in their food, and that if you don't want to be part of the GMO experiment, you shouldn't have to be, and it's also what this very exciting march that Andy is at the kickoff for right now is all about, the right to know and demanding more transparency, because it's ridiculous that we are basically the guinea pigs of the world when it comes to this technology, and so many other people around the world have this information, and we deserve it too.
Rebecca, do we really deserve it?
Absolutely, Michael. We do deserve it, and you know, people can check our website, True Food Now. We have actions every week.
Say it again.
Every other week.
TrueFoodNow.org.
Or okay. CenterForFoodSafety.org. And
okay,
we have ongoing actions that people can write to the government.
And Megan, what's your website?
NonGMOproject.org. And okay, we do have a listing
and
of over 5,000.
Out of time. Rebecca, Megan, and Andrew Kimbrell, thank you all so much for joining us on the Food Chain. Hey,
Thank you, Michael.
I really do want to trust the government.
Listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.